Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Patriots postgame show, our first victorious Patriots postgame show since what? Since when?
Week 7.
It's been a while. Not everybody's going to love this result here. Patriots win, moving to 3-10, still holding on to a top 3 overall selection. Things get a little dicey here for those people who are really kind of into this for the Tankapalooza aspect of things, which I also am, because in a lost season, wins don't really matter. But, you know, that being said, if you have any kind of, you know, affinity for the team and for the guys and feel bad, you know, what they've been going through, and I know a lot of people do, and guys who've been there, like the David Andrews's of the world and this and that, having to suffer through this brutal season, yeah. Some good vibes, particularly in the first half when they looked like they were going to score 40 points and everything was operating great, went super, super, super conservative in the second half. You know, Pitt woke up a little bit too on defense, but I thought they went into a prevent basically the entire second half, just trying not to make mistakes and give the game away. Yet they made a ton of mistakes and almost gave the game away. Yeah. Which is what's incredible about it, because it was as bad a second half as it was a good first half. But, you know, let's get into it. And, you know, the conversation for anybody here is going to come down to Zappe. And, you know, it's hard to judge Taylor because it was a tale of two halves. But, you know, what did you like? What didn't you like? Which half of Zappe is closer to the real Zappe?
Yeah, so I'll start with Zappe is the main thing. The ethical, oh, that's a beautiful graphic. Look at that. Yeah, so in the first half, there were still some of the little like hints of what were going to happen later. He did have a turnover-worthy play in the beginning of the game. I forget what it was exactly, but I remember he had a throw that could have been picked off where it looked a little dicey, and I was like,
hell,
all
even
right.
The touchdown to Henry was a turnover-worthy play. It was just an incredible throw.
That's a thing I'll say, because Minka was sitting on it. Like, I had to see a couple different angles.
Exactly. Ooh. Like, that looked to me that was an easy pick, and I think he mistimed his angle. You know, he maybe just was a step late, because to me that was something that he should have stepped right in front of. But it ended up looking like, you know, and it was easily one of the best throws he's made because of the result. Yeah. But I thought that was a potential turnover-worthy play as well.
It was, I hope somebody asked him about it. Obviously, I am not in Pittsburgh. But I thought, because he put it right out in front of Henry, I thought that he realized, like, okay, I gotta put this, like, far out so it's barely catchable.
It was either it was hard to gauge. Right. It was hard to decide, but exactly. Anyway.
Yeah, but in the beginning, I think you saw it was shoddy. Like, you saw the accuracy concerns were kind of starting to pop up a little bit. Like, it wasn't a totally perfect beginning of the game, but it was really the big throws that were the big ones. Like, he has the both touchdowns to Hunter. Well, actually, so two of the touchdowns, I thought, were really great play calls by Bill O'Brien and great play designs. And Hunter Henry was actually involved in all three of the touchdowns. There was the first one where he sets a pick. They get Zeke wide open in the flat. It's one of my favorite concepts where you just get the running back open. It's really tough for linebackers to cover them with so little space, especially if you know you're playing man defense. So that was the first one. The second one, Zappe. Minka was kind of playing underneath, and he was reading the quarterback, it would have been tough for him to make a throw because it was in the back of the end zone. But Zappe kind of looked left, knowing he was going to come back to Hunter to keep Minka out of that throwing window. I thought that was really great. And then, of course, the touchdown on the – it was an RPO fake, which when it happened – and Ahmed – I'll give Ahmed his credit. Ahmed knows ball. Because when it happened, he was like, wait, was that like the Jalen Ramsey play? And I didn't see it. I had tweeted that actually after it happened because with Mac, it wasn't apples to apples exactly. But it was in Miami, you saw the fake pump screen where they made it look like they were running an RPO. And then Kendrick Bourne went up the same thing, delayed, kind of like a wheel type of route. But Mac just threw a lollipop up there and allowed it to be intercepted, whereas Zappe threw a different kind of pass and actually threw it direct so that it wasn't as easy for Minka to make a play. So I thought that was good. You know, even the throw to Juju, there was the one on the crosser that was a really good throw, but he also had the corner where he way underthrew it, and Juju just made a great adjustment coming back to it and making a catch through contact. So that was the kind of thing you wanted to see, whereas last week you saw a lot of Bailey Zappe giving his receivers opportunities and they couldn't capitalize. But I thought Juju really did a great job in the first half of taking advantage of those opportunities. And then, you know, I think there was a throw to Tyquan Thornton that wasn't catchable. I don't know who that was on, but I just kind of popped in my head. But the first half for Zappe wasn't perfect, but was impressive considering what you expect from him. Now, the second half was when I tweeted that the Patriots are regressing to the mean, because when they were that high, you're like, this isn't normal for them. So everybody, I'm sure people rooting for the tank were pretty adamant that they wanted to see them kind of sink. But you started to get that feeling like, all right, they're probably going to slow down at some point. This doesn't really feel sustainable. And that's when you saw Bailey Zappe's turnover-worthy plays, where on his first interception, what the Patriots are doing was running a high-low concept, but to three levels. They had Tyquan Thornton running a deep post, and then on the other side, they had Hunter Henry running an in or like a crosser, and then Juju underneath. It was a weird play design, and this has happened a few times, where the check down and the underneath route actually run into each other. So I don't know what's been going on with that. I'll try to ask Bill O'Brien when we have availability. But that was a little funky, so that kind of hurt Zappe's read. But either way, he should have hit Henry, because he was open against cover three. Even if he was afraid of the safety biting down on it, that would have opened up Tyquan deep, and he had time. But to his, you know, in his defense, this was after the pass rush had started to kind of collapse in on him, and I think it sped up his process. But then he checks it down, and rather than throwing to Zeke, who was a little more open, he doesn't just throw to what didn't look like a great read to Juju, but he threw behind him, which allowed Landon Roberts to pop the ball up, and then you're like, oh, that should have been intercepted. Oh, yeah, it was intercepted. And then he was running out and then had the other play where he threw behind Tyquan to the boundary. That should have been intercepted. And you really just saw everything where Zappe was kind of teetering early on. It kind of caved in on him. But Ezekiel Elliott, man.
Wait, hold on. Maybe we'll go on him, but yeah. Was it Zappe or the how much of it was the Patriots kind of going conservative?
I didn't really think they went conservative until Zappe started putting the ball in harm's way. Because I thought that, you know, the play action shot especially was like, that was a fairly aggressive play call. Like, they're trying to move the ball downfield. I didn't really get the feeling, especially after the first half, that they were trying to reel it in. But after especially that second drive, I was like, yeah, I think they just are trying to maintain the lead and put themselves in position to just not turn the ball over again. I could look at the drive charts again. Honestly, the end of that game kind of blended together for the offense because it looked so bad. But yeah, so you had the punt where Zappe got sacked, and then the interception. So yeah, I think that Bill O'Brien just kind of started to read the tea leaves and was like, our pass protection isn't holding up. Bailey Zappi's putting the ball in harm's way. Let's just rely on Zeke. And Zeke got it done. I thought this was Zeke's best game as a Patriot, as a runner and a receiver. We've seen him kind of make some stuff happen on slip screens. We saw last week the offensive line was super, super leaky. Him and Ramondre were having to make guys miss at the line of scrimmage constantly. But I thought he did a really great job doing that. I tweeted he got way more yards than he was supposed to get. I'd like to see what my old buddies at Next Gen Stats gave him for rushing yards over expected, because there were a lot of times where he just made subtle adjustments or plowed through defenders to get more yards than he should have. So, I didn't think it was conservative necessarily, but I thought that once Zappe started and the pass protection started to, you know, decline, Bill O'Brien was just like, I'm putting it in the run game's hands.
So again, I'll kind of re-ask the question. Which of the two Zappes is closer to the real Zappe? Because
right.
you did mention regress to the mean, which means you know, obviously he's not that good, and I'm sure the answer is somewhere in the middle here. But like, you watch that first half, and it begs the question: what the hell have the Patriots been doing all this time? Like, if this was an option, why did you go with option B? And then you watch the second half, and while he wasn't slinging it all over the place and throwing the ball into team meetings and, you know, triple coverage and this and that, and, you know, he wasn't that impressive. So I don't know what you feel about, and again, no one's convincing themselves, no matter what happens down the stretch, you know, maybe go with Zappe and don't draft a quarterback next year. Nobody thinks that.
Right.
We all know that. You're not playing for anything. You're just, it's more of a kind of just trying to figure out as you're doing an autopsy on this season in real time, you know, what went on and why stick with Mac for so long when Zappe doesn't appear to have, you know, a ton of God-given talent, but he clearly looks, and he does make a lot of turnover-worthy plays. But the easiest thing to tell between the two of them is he just looks more comfortable, right?
Yeah,
at all times. Even making bad plays, he looks comfortable prior to doing it. You know what I mean? It's like,
remember when Mac was there?
No, they're sometimes poor decisions.
Yeah.
But he's not happy feet, run, you know, scrambling back foot, throwing, you know, he's just, that was a bad read, or I, you know, threw it into, you know, tight coverage. Where, like, you know, you see a lot of other people who, you know, they just look uncomfortable. And Mac is one of them. Trubisky is one of them. They just don't look great back there. And Zappe looks far more comfortable in the pocket and operating the offense.
Yeah, like, I think it was the crosser to Juju where you saw him take the two hitches up in the pocket. It's like, it stinks because, you know, we say, like, oh, we haven't seen that in so long. But I don't think anybody cares at this point. Like, I'm not going to just make up some storyline. But, you know, I think with Mac, because we stopped seeing it for so long, you forget that he was doing that his rookie season. Like, this was not a conversation last year for a reason. It's just that Mac getting hit for so long and not being able to trust his receivers, that just wore down on him after a long time. And frankly, we saw the microcosm of that happening to Bailey, where he got sacked for the game of the 2-minute drive they tried. They killed that drive. He gets sacked on third down on their opening drive. And then you see the interception because it speeds up his process. So, you know, I think it's important to understand, and I kind of remember, like, where this Patriots offense is. And, like, they had a great first half. That was awesome. This is also a Steelers team that admitted that they underestimated the Cardinals last week. So we don't know how much of that carried over. Clearly, you know, what's going on in Pittsburgh isn't great. I did five questions with some guys with the Steelers, and they actually mentioned, I was asking, like, is this Mike Tomlin's last season? Like, I don't want to be dramatic, but is he losing the locker room? Because last week, players said they underestimated the Cardinals, and Tomlin was like, no, we didn't. And the guy, and my buddy Jared Bailey was like, yeah, no, it might be time for a fresh start. Which is crazy to hear about Mike Tomlin. It's kind of like what I'm sure that Steelers fans are thinking with Belichick. So it's important to, like, remember that first half.
Yeah, because Tomlin's always had the room. You know, like, he's a clear, like, you know, command and respect guy. They even pointed it out on the broadcast when you had, like, you know, Pickens taking a playoff.
Johnson always taking a playoff.
Johnson doing it. A couple weeks ago and apologizing for it after the fact when he was, you know, when he was outed for it. But then Pickens does it tonight. Two guys who are clearly done with this, you know, what's going on here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember somebody was talking about it. I think Garrett Wilson, might have been Dominique Foxworth, was talking about it on a show today about how, like, Garrett Wilson's been a saint this year for not doing that sort of stuff with the Jets. Yeah. But, like, a lot of that goes a long way. Like, you either just kind of take it. You know, how many receivers have had to kind of grit their teeth? You know, like, how many times did it happen to Larry Fitzgerald? You know, like, you grit your teeth and you just live through a not great offensive situation, knowing that your talents are being wasted. Some people understand it, and then they're professionals, and then others behave like these guys are. And those are bad signs, you know?
And I'll say, like, I tweeted out that the Patriots receivers have not been great with that either. Like, Devontae Parker's body language is usually awful. Juju had some real bad moments last week as well. And I was like, as bad as the Pats receivers have been, the Steelers are putting on a masterclass. Because these are two, like, receiving cores that have been very vocal with their bodies about how not happy they are with their offense, or even though, you know, the Patriots receivers have way less ground to stand on than a Deontay Johnson and a Pickens, who, yeah, you know, it doesn't look good, but those are two talented guys who are probably just pissed off that they're in a bad system. Whereas, you know, it's not the same for New England's guys, but yeah, it was a matchup where you understand why the Patriots had so much success early on. But if we're talking about what is this offense for real, I think it's what we saw in the second half, where that's what it's been, where they have to rely on the run game because the pass protection can't hold up. And it contributes to the quarterbacks making bad decisions because they feel like they can't trust their surroundings.
Yep. No doubt about it. We'll kick around a few more things, throughout the show. And, you know, there were some positives. And again, we're going to give the defense its flowers once again. Mm-hmm. I know that, you know, you're facing once again a pitiful offense, but, you know.
Good run game, though.
They're asked to step up, and they did it again and again. Also going to talk about what this win and possibly more wins might how it could factor into Bill Belichick's future. And I don't mean necessarily keeping him around. We'll talk about all of those things as well. First, just tell you real quick, if you want to get in on any action heading into the weekend here, you can sign up for FanDuel, exclusive wagering partner of the CLNS Media Network and the official partner of the NFL. If you visit FanDuel.com/Boston, you get $150 in bonus bets when you place a winning $5 moneyline bet. And I'll tell you this, this is why I don't do this stuff for a living. I'm not the betting guy. I have my moments, but 2 weeks ago, I thought they were outright beating the Chargers. 2 weeks ago, I'd say 5 days ago, mm-hmm. I thought they were beating the Chargers outright. And, you know, in fairness, when you hold a team to 6 points, you should beat them. And they didn't. So I don't feel that that was that wrong, but it was wrong. This, I said, no matter what they set the over-under at, hammer it, because the Patriots aren't going to put any points on the board against the Steelers. They eclipsed that in the first half. So those were bad takes. Bad takes. So
I don't think they were bad takes. I think they were very good and right, reasonable takes. You
don't listen to me.
The other way.
make your own decisions. Go to FanDuel.com/Boston and sign up today. Get those $150 in bonus bets when you win any $5 moneyline bet. Once again, FanDuel.com. Also, we want to give a shout out to our friends over at Dreamers Pro. They are running a special on their show where you can get $20 off your first order at SeatGeek. You want to get in on the action? You want to see the red-hot Patriots down the stretch here at Gillette Stadium? Maybe those tickets won't be going for $5 on secondary outlets, now that the Patriots have found their winning ways. But Dreamers Pro, you go there, use the code Dreamers Pro at SeatGeek, America's number one ticket broker here, and you'll get $20 off your first order. Once again, use the code Dreamers Pro at SeatGeek. This is pretty good. There's a lot of cool stuff going on, whether it's a sporting event or you want to go to a show. Sometimes you got to go to those brokers, and SeatGeek has a zillion events on their site every single day. And a $20 discount really helps things out there. So go and check it out. Getting back to the game itself, we talked about Zeke, which is great. What got into Juju?
I think that he just wanted to shove it to his whole team.
Is that
I don't think it's a coincidence that he hasn't been around for like 13. Yeah, he hasn't been around for 13 weeks. I mean, if he does this for another couple weeks, then sure. And also, you know, we didn't really hear from him much in the second half, so let's just keep things in perspective there. But, I mean, I don't want to take anything away. Like, the dude balled out in the first half, which long-term kind of makes you go, well, what the hell have you been doing this whole season? Because we haven't seen anything like what we were seeing from him today. Like, I mean, in fairness, I think he's had some tough grabs on the sideline. He's made a couple of good scramble adjustments, but like not what we saw today. Like, this is what I was hoping that we were going to see in the offseason. So he's capable of it, apparently. We just haven't been getting that consistently, which, you know, I don't know, man. Maybe he just found a rhythm, but it really does seem like not a huge coincidence that he just starts to play out of his mind in a way that we didn't even see this out of him in camp. Like, the plays he was making, I have not seen from him as a Patriot in terms of, like, his effectiveness at the catch point. Like, he's been open at times this season more than his stats may suggest. But, yeah, it was – I wouldn't expect this to be a regular thing. It would be a pleasant surprise from an entertainment perspective if he started doing this every week. But, yeah, I think he just wanted to shove it to his whole team.
And shove it he did. I would say, I'm not going to lie, that, you know, just based on the chat here, people are upset for the win, and I understand that. I get it.
And I will say this, because the Cardinals have a bye, they are still one of only a few teams who have, what is it? Let me look at Tankathon. It is
a stronger strength of schedule than the Patriots.
Right. And they're the only teams with fewer than four wins.
You have a one-game cushion.
Right. So they still have a top three pick. Let's, you know, remember that. It's not the end of the world. I understand. But, like, if they win another game, that's where you hit the panic button and you're like, all right, now you're messing with, you know, my future as a Patriots fan.
There's currently 5 4-win teams, and that would complicate things because chances are there'll be at least three remaining before all is said and done. And so, you know, you're going to fall into the five, you know, potential 4, 5, 6 range based on what happens there.
Good news, the only real winnable game, or like reasonably winnable game, is the Jets. So, like, one thing I was excited about is it kind of – it didn't stink because I did find some good nuggets. But, like, preparing for this game, for my scouting report, I was like, geez, man, this is, like, so hard to really get excited about because, obviously, like, the scoring total, and it just seemed like it was going to be two teams banging their heads against the wall. But, yeah, the next 2 weeks we get to study some fun teams who will hopefully, you know – run them out, or three teams who are going to, you know, give them a much harder test than what we got from a really down bad Steelers team. I don't think they're playing anybody who's quite like this for the rest of the season.
I'll tell you this, too. I mean, we are watching some bad overall football. So it was actually from the one thing I will say, you know, and again, I'm rooting for the tank. Not because I'm an evil person. It's just practical. You know, there's no hatred in my heart, but it's just more practical. It is hard to root against them. I'm not mad at the, you know, Patriots. It just makes more sense. It's a faster path to a rebuild. However, it was definitely fun to see some functional offensive football for the first time in a long time. So that first half was a little bit welcome. It felt weird to like be annoyed that it was happening, but
it was a really bizarre. That first half was just like, I felt so weird. I'm like, I'm excited and I'm juiced up, but I don't think I'm supposed to be.
I think it's overall helped your mood. So I'm happy for you too, for not having to live through the, this has been a real miserable slog for you, you know, this year. And I, you know,
still best job in the world. A little boost is good for everybody. But there was one other one that I had that I thought was a little positive little nugget. I forgot what it was. I'll remember.
I'm sure it had to do with Jelani Tavai. You love tweeting and talking about him.
Oh man, that, you want to talk about that penalty?
That was a bad call.
That was crazy. Jelani's literally walking off, being like, "Damn, I messed up.
I bit." The center does that every time on the punt. Crazy. The snapper. What the hell was that?
Literally just picked up his head. Like, it was very obvious that they moved because he picked up his head. Bizarre, man. That's one of the worst blown calls I've ever seen.
That was a really bad one. And the Steelers sideline is like, that's not a penalty. Like, there's nothing you could do there. You know, it's so frustrating for them. I'll ask this question because I had somebody pose it to me as well. The thought of Bill Belichick wrapping up his tenure, you know, I don't know whether there's saving yourself, you know, if things go well. And, you know, I don't know. I honestly don't know because I don't think Kraft thinks like most people think. I think he really, you know, reveres Bill and his ability and his smarts to run the operation. And I don't think it's as cut and dried as everybody thinks. Nothing would surprise me, even though it seems like all signs are pointing to it's over. Now, let's say it is, in fact, over. Is there any chance that winning and not looking as bad as they've looked down the stretch inflates Bill Belichick's trade value? Because one of the things people are concerned about was this. Like, they go 2-15. Who's hiring this guy to save them? You know, like, he's the architect of one of the most miserable seasons in football history, you know, the way this offense was trending, let alone Patriots history. And it's just, you're selling really low there. If you had any hope of compensation, you need Bill to look a little bit shinier. Now, I know that would hurt your draft position, but if you wanted to get any extra draft capital or you thought that this was a trade, I do wonder whether looking better down the stretch. Because put it this way, they start playing well, you can pin a lot of it on Mac and be like, well, they stuck with him because they thought he was the best guy, but really the problem was Mac all along. I'm not saying that's the case, but I do wonder what the narrative around Bill is if they have a stronger stretch run here.
If I think you've already, in terms of Bill the coach, I think you've got plenty of examples of this team hasn't given up or given up on him. You've got players openly defending him when they're asked about him. You haven't had the type of dissension that you've got from like a Jets, where people have been openly pissed off and you've seen there's a lack of buy-in at times. With the Patriots, you don't really feel like people don't care. Like, they have the best run defense of the past decade, so one of the best of the past decade. And that is, you don't play good run defense if you don't care. It is, like, every time I ask players about why they did well in, you know, run defense this week or whatever, they're like, it's about execution, technique, and effort. And most of it is effort. Like, if you want to be a good run defender, you're going to be a good run defender, because most of it's just throwing your body and just being tougher than the other person. So I think that's a really good sign for him. The pass defense has had its problems, but a lot of those are just J.C. Jackson.
They have not quit. Yeah. And so that's what's interesting, is they've not quit. I mean, you said you've got some issues with some receivers here, but I find some of these guys to be like Johnny come lately rental type guys, not necessarily, but like Juju year one, you know, Devontae, whatever. I know, you know, he's hot and cold with that sort of stuff in terms of attitude. But for the most part, as you said, they're fighting, you know, like they, how pumped did they look when, you know, when they were scoring early in that game, you know, like, They're going out there and they're trying. This isn't a lot of like, what's the point sort of stuff.
Right.
And even still, the defense could have completely turned on the offense right now. Even in that 6-0 loss, it wasn't like, damn, these guys got to help us. It was, well, shit, if our job is to shut the other team out to win, then that's what we got to do. You know, like, and, you know, that's a positive sign that, you know, still throughout this, he garners enough respect for people to not quit and bail out, because that's what kind of, you know, part of the Bill problem, it's as far as other people are looking at it, is, you know, what Rex Ryan had said, you know, on a talk show the other day, is it just hard to play for the Patriots? Is it just new, this generation just doesn't want to deal with all of the, you know, the details and the grinding and the no fun and the homework and the changing the playbook all the time, and just how challenging it is to be a New England Patriot and just have a guy who's just doing it and like kind of you know, seems kind of miserable. And it's not worth it when you're not winning. So who wants to do this anymore? Obviously, there's guys here who still absolutely love playing for him.
I think Jabril Peppers put it best.
This could have gone really bad the way Bill Belichick runs a team, and it hasn't yet.
And again, Jabril Peppers, he mentioned last week, he was like, Bill tells us every single week, this is what we need to do to beat this team. And if we don't do it, we lose. So I think it's one thing if you're part of an organization where they, you know, they have all these mantras and they tell you all these things, and then the product doesn't work and you're like, well, like the whole system is kind of, I don't get what we're doing here. It's very different when, like Pepper said, Bill Belichick is handing you the keys to the game. He's like, do this, we will win. And you look back at the tape and it's like, well, we didn't do that. Now, on the field, like coaching and all those things, those are still significant. And the poor execution and the roster building, that's Bill the GM. Like, all those things still matter. But at the end of the day, I think one of the reasons he has the buy-in is because of that, where players have to look at themselves and be like, well, Bill told us exactly what we had to do, and we didn't do a good enough job. So how mad can we really be at him or at the organization when our execution has been poor? And I don't, as an outsider, it's almost impossible to know, virtually impossible to know how much of that is really just they're not being prepared well enough, you know, on a more minute level, not just like here are the game plan notes, it's just like technique and all those things like that, whatever. But I think that is the biggest thing, is that there is tangible evidence that Belichick still knows what he's doing and is putting them in position to succeed. It's just not coming through. And a lot of it, again, is the offense, which is just not something that he spends most of his time doing, as we learned last year, where he was involved in a way that was uncharacteristic. So if they can retool the offense and build a GM, just find some way to kind of get up to update his I guess the way that he sees roster building and things like that and gets himself a competitive offense, I think that Bill, the coach, yeah. is fine and he could still be great. Because on defense, I think you're seeing it. Yeah.
That's the thing is, like, you know, everyone's so quick to say Bill's got to go. It's just what you really wish would happen is that Bill could change. You know, it's Bill, if he can't change his thinking, his philosophy, drafting defensive players because that's his comfort zone, drafting, you know, and a Taylor Will, you know, I don't think I could have been more annoyed about the draft, not in terms of just the players picked. It was the type of players picked. And I was really annoyed by the coverage after the draft of, like, they got some really good players. I wasn't saying they didn't. They just didn't need the – and I don't know that they did because Marte Mapu can't see the field and Keon White is nice, but you just didn't need depth at those positions as much as you needed so much else. So I just find that so brazen to ignore these obvious needs, and that's what drove me crazy then. It's driven me crazy in past drafts. You know, ignoring these things, you wish Bill would just not – do that and would understand what modern NFL offenses need in order to be moderately successful and then be aggressive in that or recognize that up. Like I use this example all the time. The older I get, the more I lean on kids to help with aspects of the business that are just shit I'm not good at. Like, you know, who are most of the, who's running social media at most of the companies like ours? 24-year-old, 25-year-old kids, because they get it better than we do. I'm not going to be like, hey, what, do an Instagram for me. You know, like, no, it's stupid. Like, get the kids. Let the kids do it. I let Ahmed do everything, you know? So Bill's got to get a guy who's just going to be like, I know what I'm doing here. We're going to get a whole bunch of, you know, cool offensive weapons and I'm going to make it all work and this and that. You wish Bill would go outside the organization for creative help for different people and not always these institutional guys who learned under him in the first place. So the thinking is stale and it's the same thing that's been going on passed down. Worst thing that happens in these situations, this happens in any job. People learn from the people in front of them and whether they're ready or not, they ascend to the position because of comfort, but they might not be as good. So they're doing what their predecessors did, but worse. And then it gets worse and it gets worse and it gets worse. I've seen that in places I've worked before. The people who we started with are not the people who we ended up with, but you just keep passing them up, you know, but, you know, moving them up the chain because whatever. So open it up, bring in some young hotshot play caller, you know, try different things. I don't know that he does that. And I think that's what happens is it's Bill's way or no way at all. And that's where you're stuck. Cause but I do think people need to consider what they're losing with Bill. It's not as easy as just get rid of the guy. He's a clown. You know, that's not true.
I mean, no, I agree. And that's, I've been on the, you know, I wouldn't say the wagon necessarily, but I've admitted that, like, yeah, there's a lot of reasons to fire Bill. And if you wanted to make the case, you absolutely can. And especially in the middle of this losing streak, and especially like after all the games, it's really hard to sit here and be like, yeah, I'll probably be back. Because just the mood that you feel and like being in the locker room and the way that the crafts respond, like in their own box, it's like, all right, you can definitely see why they would split ways. But then at the same time, there's nights like tonight and there's things that people say and there's little nuggets where you're like, but it's not as bad as people may have expected it to be because it has been bad record-wise. Like, it has been a huge disappointment of a season, but we have not seen it fall apart to the degree that it very easily could have. And, like, you know, you can say that you're just kind of making excuses or whatever, but you have to give Bill some credit for that because it has been incredible. No one has turned on him. And the only admissions we've had of frustration have been like Devon Gotcha being like, yeah, it's annoying. Like, I'm frustrated. And Phillips being like, well, we just have to pitch shutouts. That's not really that bad. That's like very human and understandable in three straight games where you give up 10 or less and your offense can't win. Like, that's understandable, but it's not like, I don't know what we're doing here or like we need to do this or that. Because that's what you usually see when organizations get to the point where it's like you need wholesale change, pull all the plugs, full stop. And even if Belichick does move on, I think – a lot of people are probably on the bandwagon of like, well, please keep the defensive staff because you want some of what Bill Belichick instilled culture-wise and defensively because he's still one of, if not the greatest defensive mind in football. And you see that week in and week out. Like, these plans are fantastic. It's just sometimes the execution isn't there because there are pieces in there that they didn't expect to have such prominent roles.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, this did have a chance. I mean, I think the key to a successful season this year was really Mac not being this much worse, and having a semi-functional offense while you had an elite type of defense. And that, I think, was what people thought could have kept them competitive. You lost a lot of playmakers on defense, and then you had this stretch offensively where you were playing great defensive games against the mediocre teams that were coming up on the schedule and just didn't have enough offense to win. So, I mean, you're right. Even a slightly less bad offense, and it's a 5 or 6 win team right now. So you're right. But again, it's just one side of the ball is just so talent deficient. It's hard to ignore. And that's the problem, is it's bordering on negligence. And I think that's where it really comes down to, which is like, man, I don't know how long you can keep ignore. Like, this shit almost caught, like, I mean, look what it did to Brady. Like, Brady lost his mind late, you know, not just because they wouldn't lock him up, but, you know, like, that Super Bowl run, he was miserable all year. Miserable. And then he was miserable as hell the next year. And, you know, he was so mad that he makes them go trade for Antonio Brown. They didn't want to do that. Then he makes them go get me something else. And then they give up a second for Sanu. You know, it was just desperate because they had ignored so much of it. And, you know, it just wasn't sustainable. And then they just continued to ignore offense every year since, which is just nuts. You lose the best quarterback who's ever played, and you just don't try to. I mean, I know you drafted Nikhil the next year, so you took a shot, but that was about it.
One thing that does need to get answered for: offense, understandable. Defense did its job. What the hell was going on? Special teams. Oh, so that's another God.
Thing. When you have roughly a seventh of your roster dedicated to only special teams, that's all they do. That's it. And nobody does that anymore because special teams are getting phased out of the game. And the Patriots still go crazy on it, hoping that that's an area where they'll have a huge advantage over everybody else. And they're horrible. This was horrible today.
Yeah. So I'm looking at it right now. So Bryce Behringer had 2 touchbacks, and that's not even the worst part. That's just what I looked up at the moment. He had 1 block because Ty Montgomery got walked back and gave up a block. Brendan Schooler, once again, does not keep his composure. I don't know what it is, and he's a really talented player. No one's good enough to be drawing stupid penalties like when you slap somebody in the face. That's not one of these things where, like, somebody pushes your guy and you shove them. Like, there are some, like, overly aggressive penalties where it's like, yeah, I understand. That's understandable. You don't hit somebody in the face. That's just stupid. That's aggressive, but it's just not smart football. And then what was the other one? There was another one. Jelani Tavai, the false start.
Tavai had an obvious penalty that wasn't. And one of those Behringer touchbacks was one on a play the Patriots should have gone for it anyway. And this was, again, Bill being very, very, very conservative, punting on 4th and less than 1 twice in the game. And then obviously at the very end. But that touchback was 7 yards deep. Like, that wasn't a ball that bounced at the 3. He kicked it 6 yards into the end zone. That's just a horrible, horrible punt. Then even on the last punt, he tried to sideline it, and he landed it on the 20. So, I mean, just not a good game for him. He's been good. He's, you know, he's been better than that.
It was a rough game. It was a rough couple of weeks for him. Yeah. But yeah, the special teams, and with Joe Judge back in the mix, like, they signed Chris Board, who was a stud special teamer for Detroit. And like you said, with a seventh of your roster committed to these types of guys, you expect this to be one of the better units in the NFL.
You basically have 2 special teams coaches in Judge and Cam McCord, you know?
I don't get it, man. I have no explanation. It's I don't know how you fix it. Because Joe Judge was supposed to be the answer because Cam Acord wasn't doing well enough when he took over for Judge. And now it's just like, all right, not a whole lot of improvement. So, yeah, that needs to get fixed because if you're talking about next year, if this offense gets better, then you're hoping that you're in more close games that are competitive. But the big difference maker in those games is when you have a special teams unit that's giving up big returns like we saw last week, or getting dumb penalties where, you know, it didn't get called. They didn't get called for it, but they should have gotten called for it. And that's like taking away possessions, giving offenses longer drives, just not nearly good enough. So if we're talking long term, the defense is very good, but the offense and special teams with, and they're going to be losing Matthew Slater and probably Cody Davis as well. Not that they're, you know, playing at Pro Bowl levels either. Frankly, like Matthew Slater, I hate to say this, he's not been great the past couple years. Like if you look at least his grades, it's hard to go like play for play with guys on special teams, but his grading, it's more bad than good. And you don't really hear like you used to where it's, you know, at least every few games, there's one where Matthew Slater just pops off and you hear his name called a few times. You don't really hear his name. And when you do, it's usually because of penalties or something bad. So this whole unit like needs a serious rebuild next offseason.
I'm not going to get into my Matthew Slater spiel because, again, I don't value special teams, not in the sense that it's not important. I just don't think you should have that many special teams only players. I don't think that's a very controversial take.
I'm fine with it if you're elite. If you're elite, fine. But
Year they cut somebody who they could have been useful. Like even like not, you know, I'm trying to think recent examples. I remember one year they cut Keon Crossan and just to keep somebody who played special teams only. I'm like, Crossan could have been your fifth or your sixth D back. Like that's a person who could play for you in dime packages and as an injury replacement versus someone you kept. I was like, just make him a special teamer. Like figure it out. Like just have these guys who that's who should be your special teamers. Your backup linebackers and you know, and sixth and seventh DBs, guys who can get on the field for you potentially if you need to. Having guys who only do one thing, I think, is freaking insane in today's NFL. So hold on. Oh, it's funny. Bailey Zappi from the press conference with a little quote here. Alex Barth asks, really? No, Alex Barth tweets, did you have anybody special in the crowd tonight? Zappy, nobody. They all watch from home. I don't want to pay for those tickets. I'm still on a rookie contract. That's expensive. That's tough. Funny. Yeah, it's a good one. Yeah, it's a fourth round rookie contract. So, you know.
It's not exactly making the big bucks.
Not yet. They need an in-season tournament in the NFL for these lower paid guys to make a couple extra bucks. So anything else to put a bow on this one here? Is the Patriots win, you know, sad face emoji, you know, to take down the Steelers. They've got 10 days off and then the Chiefs, right?
Mm-hmm. Chiefs, then I think it's Broncos.
Chiefs, Broncos, Bills, Jets. Chiefs, mm-hmm. Broncos, Bills, Jets, okay? Mm-hmm. So four games remaining, and the Jets by then, you know, they'll have Aaron Rodgers back, so –
Jabril Pepper is defending Bill Belichick again. He said, needed this win for the players and Bill Belichick and the coaches. Don't like all the flack Belichick has been taking. There he goes. Earlier this week, he defended Bill. He's very serious. He does not like it.
I will say, you know, Peppers has been a great ambassador for this team. He would have made a good, like, dynasty era Patriot for the type of swag that he's got, you know, and So it's a shame it's being wasted on this team because he is a great defender of you know, of the Patriots and everything that's going on here. So he's been great. Yep. It's a shame.
I love Peppers, man. Future captain, lock it in. I've been saying
it's a shame to waste. You know, and Bill glowed and gushed about him and Duggar as, you know, being outstanding and this and that. But yeah, they're squandering some good efforts there, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. And again, you want to put another positive spin on it. You talk about the run defense. Defensive line was an area of concern entering the season, you know, for this team. And stopping the run was something they were not excellent at last year. That's something that's completely turned around. And you're still playing competitive ball in the secondary, despite losing what presumably were, you know, two of your top three corners entering the year.
And then Zeke talked about Zappi. He said Zapp was balling tonight. He commands our attention in the huddle. He just had so much confidence, and the offense could definitely feel that.
So again, a lot of this stuff. So far, yeah, I know, but this is all, sadly, these are all kind of subtweets of this is a referendum on Mac, you know. And so my question is this: I don't know what your vibe is here on it, and we'll wrap with this. The dude certainly the players seem to want Zappi in there. Like, how out were they on Mac? Or do you think they almost was like, kind of like, it was like a mercy killing? Like, get the guy out of there. He's all messed up. Like, I don't know that they hated Mac, but I definitely think that they really were like, we got to get him out of there. Like, we need to do something different.
I think everybody in that locker room understands that Mac, like, works his ass off. There's no question about that. I think he treats everybody respectfully and is, I think, you know, in his own way, I think he is a good leader for that team. And I think he did everything that I really do believe that he did every single thing he could, which is why I don't think people stopped liking him as a person. But I do think, you know, when you're balling and you have a guy on the other side who's turning the ball over constantly, multiple times every game, it's one thing when Bailey's doing it and it's not actually happening. Because you can forget a turnover-worthy play, you know, in the midst of a game when you don't actually turn the ball over. But when it's two and three times the defense is like, didn't we just sit down? Why are we getting back on the field? You know, so I do think that when it comes to the end of Mac's tenure, I think they were just like, I think it was a mercy killing where it's like, he's not doing anything good enough. And he's actively helping us lose games. So we just need something else. We have to see if Bailey can at least protect the ball and make the throws that are there. Has he made the throws that are there? Sometimes, sometimes not. He turned the ball over. You know, last week was his first time really not. He had the interceptable pass, but that was on fourth down. So I kind of – it wasn't a great decision still. It could have been returned for a pick six, but I kind of understood his decision-making there. But, yeah, I do think that it was more just like Mac is struggling, man. We can't keep doing this. Like, we're waiting for him to stop with the turnovers and just find some stability, which, you know, to his credit – supporting cast, like with Bailey, hasn't been helping him very much. But Bailey just, you know, is a bit fresher and was able to go in with that confidence, because I can't imagine how hard it's been for Mac being the quarterback of this team for the past 2 years.
I'll ask you one last question. What is Mac Jones doing at this time next year?
Trying to up his trade stock in training camp, or this time next year. That's not how that works. I think he'll be on another team this time next year. But I do think that the Patriots will try to keep him around and get the highest pick they can for him.
Late round pick swap, sadly, I think is all we're going to get.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's getting much of anything right now. So if you can get like a fifth or whatever, move up a little bit in the fifth round, hey man, take what you can get.
All right, we're going to wrap. Thank you guys for hanging out. I know everyone is bummed about the win, but rest assured, okay, the Patriots still hold on to the number 2 overall pick due to strength of schedule over the Cardinals, which, again, if anybody is Williams or May, you know, ballpark, you're still firmly in position there. If that's really what you want to do, you're in Marvin Harrison Jr. land, even though there was a report today that maybe he's not coming out. I think that's not likely, but I think the Caleb Williams train might have sailed tonight. And so now the Patriots are 2 wins clear of Carolina, who did have some potentially winnable games down the stretch there, and the strength of schedule was going to be pretty tight. So that's something the Patriots could have possibly snuck into. I think that's become exceedingly difficult now for the Patriots to be able to do. With the 3 wins, there are 5 teams at 4 wins. Certainly if the Patriots get there, they're going to fall a little bit further down in the draft order. So again, if this is all you're watching for, they're still there. Things got a little tougher. I'll tell you this though. Nobody expected they were going to beat the Giants. I mean, no. They were going to lose to the Giants and they did. No. So that for your tank, for your tanking pleasure was a tank, was a gift. And you know, The tank gods giveth and taketh away.
They also missed, like Bill Belichick said himself, that they essentially missed 2 extra points on field goal attempts to tie those games. So, like, understand, you already got real, real lucky twice, you know. Eventually, yeah. Regress to the mean, the same thing. So they kind of had to get a win at some point against that team.
So it happened. Taylor, check out Taylor's stuff on clnsmedia.com. He's going to write it all up and have a breakdown for you about what went on today, what went right, and maybe some things to actually celebrate on the field as the Patriots win and beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 21-18, the final. Once again, thank you guys for watching. Check us out. Follow us on Twitter. Check out Taylor's written stuff, and we'll have much more Patriots coverage throughout the weekend. And then obviously in the next week as they get ready for the Kansas City Chiefs.